that everybody has a great couple weeks without us. keep it cool until we come back.
You can reach out to us, though, if you want to, on the interweb.
Over the interweb, of course. And I was going to say something else. Oh, I wanted to make a mention, because we were talking about the homeless ban, that there is a new issue of Street Roots called the Winter Resource Guide for Multnomah County, where to get help and where to give help.
Nice.
That provides a lot of resources for folks on both sides of that equation of where to find help and where to help out.
Awesome.
This
Thank
has been
you,
The Gap. Althea. Is that the last thing we say?
This has been The Gap. And before, I want to squeeze one more thing does. Happy birthday, Garrick. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back in a few. And this has been The Gap.
All right.
Thank you
Bye.
So much. See ya.
Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.
Thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country. Come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Come on the peace train. Yes, peace train. Good friends too, cause it's getting nearer, it soon will be with you. Come and join the living, it's not so far from you, and it's getting nearer, soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder. The world as it is, why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country. Come take me home again. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Come on. Peace.
train. Hey, yes, it's the peace train.
Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in the Portland area, 104.3 FM Corvallis and the Willamette Valley, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Columbia River Gorge. And you can listen to KBOO on the World Wide Web at kboo.fm. I'm Marvin, and Ray is engineering for me. I played that song because, you know, I go down and see my brother in Yahats quite a bit, and we thought that there was a museum there for conscientious objectors during World War II. But there's one building there that was part of it, and now there's a bicycle shop there where the guy fixes and repairs bicycles. And if you need a bicycle and don't have money, he just gives you a bicycle. He's a pretty nice guy. And I found this book. The museum for the conscientious objectors is down in Eugene at University of Oregon. There's a museum there that has all the stuff that they brought from the camps. There were three camps in Oregon. I got this book. It's called Here on the Edge, How a Small Group of World War II conscientious objectors took art and peace from the margins to the mainstream. It's called Here on the Edge. It's by Steve McQueedy. And it's really a good book, you know. I'm reading it now. I haven't got through all of it, but it's really, really interesting. So if you ever get the chance to read the book, it's great. Like I said, there were three camps, and they were actually called civilian public service, because these guys just didn't sit around, you know. They did a lot of work, you know, in the forest and just different jobs, doing different things. And it was really interesting. I haven't got to go to the museum down there, and I really want to. But there were three camps. Camp 56 was in Walport, and where the camp was, it's now the Job Corps. It's just outside of Walport, going towards Yahats. And the other one was Camp 21, and it was in Cascade Locks. And the third one, Camp 59, was in Elkton. And all of them did different jobs and different things. Boy, it was just really interesting. The poems that came out of that area, the just so much stuff. They wrote plays. They had newspapers. They just did everything, and a lot of really good people came out of the civilian public service, objectors. And if you ever get the chance, you should read the book. Or go down to Salem, Eugene at the university and see the museum. Boy, I'm going to definitely do that. You go down and see it. I want to say hi to my friends Gary and Darla back in Lincoln, Nebraska, and my good friend Kathy in Hillsboro, who I've known at least 31 years, and she's a really good supporter of the peace movement in this area, in our area. And we text almost every day. And I want to say hello to Tracy. Tracy's a wonderful person. She has five children. One of them is a set of twins, twin boys. And she doesn't live far from me, but she's just a good person. The children are half Moroccan, and she only had one girl, Yasmin, and Yasmin now lives in, I don't think of Yasmin, I think she just turned 18 maybe, and she now lives in Spain, and she helped me do a lot of work at my house for the room that Laurel's office was. We had to take a lot of books and stuff out of there, but the bedroom turned out nice. We talked a lot about the junior ROTC, Junior Reserve Officer Training, and they're in schools. And this came out of the New York Times, and it says Pentagon received documentation reports of at least 58 instances. Boy, I'm having trouble with my tongue. Last 5 years in which high school military instructors who led Junior Reserve Officer Corps classes sexually abused or harassed students, military officials told a subcommittee on Wednesday, in response to the criticism that they had failed to oversee the program. And we've talked a lot about that. We talked a lot about the recruiter, also the recruiters harassing young women, before they go into the military. And then when they get in the military, they get harassed. If I was a young woman, I definitely wouldn't go into the military. You have to fight off the guys that are supposed to be there, you're a part of them helping, and you get sexually harassed. That really is a bad thing. Also something, we talked about before, how we talked about, we talked about telling these kids, don't go in the military, think about it, because they're going to lie to you, whatever, and then when you get in there, they're going to just mess with you. And, that so-called contract that these kids sign, they get promised all this stuff, and they write it down and say, this is what you're promised. And then I think it's the back sheet of that. It says it doesn't matter what you were guaranteed, you'll be put in a position that the military wants you to be in, basically what it says. So it doesn't matter. I should bring that in again and read it. But basically, it just says that everything that you were promised doesn't mean anything. That they can put you in anything that they want you to do. And that happened a lot in this, in that continuing Gulf Wars, that a lot of people got put in jobs they were never trained to. I've talked to so many veterans coming out of those stinking wars, that say, well, I was never trained to do what I did, but they just put me there. I never, thought I'd be behind a 50 caliber machine gun, just different stories like that. And I get a lot of the women saying, how they were afraid to go to the women's restroom at nighttime, and if they had to go, they went in pairs. So in this report, that's really interesting that the Pentagon admitted that, and its military acknowledges more sexual abuse in junior ROTC programs, and then for the New York Times to put it in their paper is kind of interesting, and I'm glad they've done that, so that, you know, the mothers and fathers can see what would happen to their daughters. And this, I was at the clinic, VA clinic, getting something. I was getting my second booster shot, and I was sitting in the lobby waiting to, you know, have them to call me back and give me my booster shot. So I pick up this magazine. It's called Veterans of Foreign Wars magazine, and you know, they're pretty much a rah-rah organization, which all the veteran guys and who almost said all the veterans know. And I picked it up and I was reading it, and I flipped this page. It says, "Fewer veterans are recommending military service. A 2021 questionnaire shows veterans and families in recent years are less likely to recommend joining the military. The report cites food insecurity, insufficient pay, and a lack of trust in military leadership as a few reasons for the troubling drop." And here's some of the stuff. Not family friendly. Study participants felt that the military caused stress on families. They expressed that military service is hard on marriages, family relationships, and relationships with children. This was the number one reason for not recommending military service. Not enough pay. Respondents believe the military pay is too low, especially considering the difficulty and stress of the job. This has led to food insecurities among military families. Pay also was considered too low due to the rising cost of living. That some of these lower rank people in the military, they're on food stamps. They get food stamps. That's pretty horrible. Unhappy with leadership. This would be my number one. The study reported that participants complained about military leadership. Results of the questionnaire stated that they felt as if some leaders were bad, corrupt, abusive, and controlling. They also there were accusations of corruption and frequent abuse by commanders, as well as the perception that troops are less than human, are just a number. Remember that all the officers are these folks that went to, you know, universities or colleges, and some of them came out of West Point. But there's just no trust. Benefits not worth it. Questionnaire respondents believe that benefits such as military-funded health care are not worth the challenges of military service. No stability. Respondents also would not recommend military life due to the frequent deployments and moves. Based on the findings, the Military Family Advisory Network recommended that the military conduct additional research on military families' well-being. You know, it's just horrible. Also, some veterans, and my friend Kathy told me about this. She saw it on one of the morning TV shows, that houseless veterans in San Francisco, are suing the government for not adequate. Ray, I don't know what's wrong with my tongue this morning. not helping them, you know, find housing, not helping them find medical care. You know, that's just like in this, what these people are saying, not that they don't recommend the military service. And the veterans are saying, you know, come on, you know, you told us all these lies and stuff, and you got us in the military. And now that we're out, you promise us all this stuff, and we get nothing. And homeless veterans, that's a really big problem. That really, really grinds on me that these folks, are having a hard time getting what they deserve to get. And that's just, just horrible. Horrible. Okay, really quick before I get into something else. This also came from, where did this come from? This is kind of from Disabled American Veterans Magazine. And it's kind of interesting that on the front cover is the president. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8 people standing behind him. And says, sealing a pact for toxic exposed veterans on page 5. But I'm on page 9. And we did the, when those folks came home from that first round of the Gulf Wars, the never ending Gulf Wars, they came back with Gulf War illnesses. And we did tests, helped them to get tests. We paid for some tests for these folks. We did all this stuff, And Gulf War illness have eluded veterans and medical researchers for decades. But now a new study seems to have cracked the case on how roughly 250,000 veterans were sickened during the 1991 Persian Gulf War, exposed to chemical weapons sarin. Sarin is deadly. Sarin is just... While combat lasted 43 days, the harmful health effects on some who served in the conflict have stretched for decades. Known as a cluster of once inexplainable symptoms, Gulf War illness, sometimes called Gulf War syndrome, can include muscle aches, joint pain, dizziness, memory lapse, headaches, fatigue, and insomnia. But it seems like now they're really taking it serious. And it looks like the veterans out of the 1991 horrible thing. Sarin was not only stored in Saddam Hussein's Iraq, but also on the used on the country's citizens, and that's true. That's true. But it looks like these veterans are going to get some help with the damage. It isn't just about healing a damaged brain, it's also healing a damaged heart. These folks that got that is just horrible. World War One had its poison gas. World War II had its horrible post-traumatic stress disorder, battle fatigue, what they called it. Vietnam had Agent Orange, and now our brothers and sisters in the Gulf Wars have Gulf War syndrome, Gulf War illness. So that's another one. The reason not to go into the military is all this. I was listening to a story about World War II, and of the millions of troops that went to World War II, the millions of troops from the United States went to World War II, there is only 159,000 left of World War II veterans. 159,000. I don't know how many from Korea is left. I don't know how many from Vietnam, but I know that Korean veterans have got to be really turning down, and I know Vietnam vets too are starting to drop, and I really that's just something that bothers me. I think we're going to have a music interlude right now. And okay, Ray, go ahead, buddy. Okay, that's great. I was just this is something that's really I've talked about before. The U.S. is going after China, and I've been reading up on it. And but something I didn't know and that I've read that U.S. has deployed 6 B-52 heavy bombers to Australia, and that there's Marines stationed in Darwin, Australia, and there's a Pine Gap intelligence base that's in it doesn't say where it's at. But in this is also in Australia, so they're moving their heavy stuff to surround China. Also, U.S. Air Force B-52H Stratofortresses from the 2nd Bomb Wings is being deployed to Air Force Base in Guam, Anderson Air Force Base in Guam, in preparations for a bomber task force exercise. Bomber task force mission demonstrate the strategic credibility and tactical flexibility of U.S. forces in today's security environment across the globe. So the, I don't remember how many that they sent there, but they sent quite a in Guam to okay, and to conduct operations in the Indo-Pacific region, and B-52s. If you folks remember, is what the U.S. used to bomb Laos, Cambodia, and of course Vietnam. Not only the north of Vietnam, but in the south that we were supposedly taking care of. The aircraft deployed from the 2nd bomb wing at Barksdale Air Force Base, Louisiana, to support U.S. Indo-Pacific Command and the Pacific Air Force training efforts with joint forces and partners. Okay, deployed, reinforced. Okay. The Air Force is currently working in complex, dynamic, and sometimes vulnerable global security environment, says Colonel, and I can't even pronounce his name. It is our charge to regularly conduct these joint and combined security operation engagement across different geographical combat commands and their areas of responsibility. It doesn't say, but I know that was a lot that they sent. It's the show of force to China. And also the U.S. Air Force just unveiled its advanced new B-21 Raider stealth bomber. And it's going to be also deployed. And it is got everything the bomber needs, Ray. Everything a bomber needs is this new one. Yeah. And one thing they're also deploying is these warthogs. These attack helicopters, they're called warthogs, and they were used mainly to attack tanks. But these warthogs, boy, they are devastating, just completely devastating. All the armament they have on these things, boy, I'm really surprised they didn't use them to go after Russia when Russia was first going into Ukraine, when they had all these tanks lined up for miles, you know. These warthogs would really have done some damage on those things. They are just devastating, those machines. And they're also being deployed to different places. This is really interesting too. Stratcom commander, I don't know, Stratcom. Oh, Strategic Air Command. Commander says U.S. should look to 1950s to regain competitive edge. The current conflict in Ukraine is not the worst that the U.S. should be prepared for. Around the corner, said the commander of the U.S. Strategic Command, the U.S. must be prepared for much more. The Ukraine crisis that we're in right now, this is just a warm-up. Navy Admiral Charles A. Richard, commander of STRATCOM, said, the big one is coming, and it isn't going to be very long before we're going to get tested in ways that we haven't been tested in a long time. During a speech at the Naval Submarine League annual symposium and industry update, Richard said the U.S. must get itself prepared. We have to do some rapid fundamental changes in the way we approach the defense of this nation, he said. I will tell you, the current situation is illuminating what nuclear coercion looks like and how you or how you don't stand up to it. Competitors like China, Richard said, are outcompeting U.S. and in a drastic fashion. The U.S. must step up its deterrence game, he said, or we're going to be bowled over. As I assess our level of deterrence against China, the ship is slowly sinking, he said. It is sinking slowly, but it is sinking. As fundamentally as putting capability in the field faster than we are, as those curves keep going, it isn't going to be a matter of how good our operating plan is or how good... Turn in the page. How good commanders are or how good our forces are, we're not going to have enough of them. And that is a very near-term problem. One area where the U.S. still dominates is with its undersea capacities. The U.S. submarine fleet, said Richards. Undersea capability is still the one, maybe the only one, true systematic advantage we still have against our opponents. But unless we pick up the pace in terms of getting out maintenance problems fixed, getting new construction going, if we can't figure that out, we are not going to put ourselves in a good position to maintain strategic deterrence and national defense. Regaining the advantage in other areas might mean looking backwards as much as 60 or more years, Richard said, to a time when U.S. military was able to do things faster than what it does today. We need to know how to move fast, and we have lost that art. One example he provided was the AGM-28 Hound Dog cruise missile, which entered service in 1960. The Air Force went from a request almost written on a napkin when they figured out in the late 50s that the Soviets' integrated air defense systems were getting to the point that B-52s just wasn't going to make it. And we need things called up cruise missile. And so they envision what a standoff weapon looks like. The U.S. military was able to deliver the Hound Dog cruise missile in just 33 months. Boy, this guy. We had two squadrons of B-52s equipped with 80 nautical mile Mach 2 plus 1 megaton nuclear warhead with accuracy that was really good for its days, hanging off the wings of B-52s in less than 3 years. He said, this weapon was so cool you could actually turn the engine on its cruise missiles on your wing to give you additional thrust. We've got to get back into the business of not talking about how we are going to mitigate our eventual failures to get Columbia in on time. The B-21, which I just talked about, the LRSO, I don't know what that is, and flip it to the way we used to ask questions about this nation. China is simply going to out-compete us, and Russia isn't going anywhere anytime soon. This guy, he just put it out on the line that China is our big competitor. You know, when he talks about that, you know, national interest, he's talking about China going around the world, you know, and making the U.S. a second-class power, like they're in the South China Sea, and U.S. hasn't done anything about that. China is you know, it's coming out of its old days. Okay, this really tells what they're thinking of, you know. Surrounded, how the U.S. is encircling China with military bases. The U.S. military is in, I'm going to take a drink here. Try to get my tongue working right. The U.S. military is encircling China with a chain of air bases and military ports. The last link, a small airstrip on the tiny Pacific island of Saipan. The U.S. Air Force is planning to lease 33 acres of land on the island for the next 50 years to build a divert airfield. The U.S. military is encircling China with a chain of air bases and military ports. Okay, I think I read that. And the Chinese are in no mood to be surrounded by America. The Pentagon's big new strategy for the 21st century is something called air-sea battle, a concept that about combining air and naval forces to punch through the increasingly formidable defenses of the nation like China or Iran. Well, the Iranian people are really standing up, you know. I'm proud of the Iranian people. Okay. It may sound like a bad strategy, and truth be told, a lot of air-sea battle is still in the conceptual phase. But a very concrete part of this concept is being put in place in the Pacific. Remember, Obama said that they're changing their looking at leaving the Middle East and going towards the Pacific, as far back as President Obama. An important but oft overlooked part of air-sea battle calls for military to operate from small, bare-bones bases in the Pacific that its forces can disperse to in the case their main bases are targeted by Chinese ballistic missiles. Saipan would be used by American jets in case access to U.S. Super base at Guam. See, Guam, remember, Guam is where they're getting those 6 or 7 B-52 bombers, stratoflat bombers. And that's a big base. Or other Western Pacific airfields is limited or denied. Reads this Air Force document discussing the impact building such fields on Saipan and nearby Tinian would have an environment there. Those islands, Saipan and Tinian, were in World War II. That's where the Marines, you know, fought those huge battles. Were on these islands. Okay, where'd we go? Actually, want the air? Oh, wait a minute. Tinian would have. Okay. Residents of Saipan actually want the Air Force to use the historic airbase on Tinian that the U.S. Marines are already refurbishing and flying F-18 Hornet fighters out of on a occasional basis. So they already have the base there. They're just going to make it bigger, you know. Specifically, the Air Force wants to expand the existing Saipan International Airport, build on the skeleton of a World War II base used by Japan and later by the United States. to accommodate cargo fighter and tanker aircraft, along with up to 700 support personnel for periodic divert landings, joint military exercises, and joint and combined humanitarian assistance and disaster relief efforts, according to the Air Force. Well, they brought that up right at the end after all this other stuff. This means that service plans on building additional aircraft parking space, hangars, fuel storage tanks, and ammunition storage facilities, in addition to other improvements to the historic airfield. And it's not the only facility getting an upgrade. In addition to the site on Saipan, the Air Force plans to send aircraft on regular deployments to bases ranging from Australia to India as part of its bulked-up forces in the Pacific. These plans include regular deployments of Royal Australian Air Force bases at Darwin and Tyndall, Changi Air Base in Singapore, Korat Air Base in Thailand, I can't even pronounce this air base in India, and possibly bases at Kubi Point and Puerto Princess in the Philippines, and airfields in Indonesia and Malaysia, a top U.S. Air Force general revealed. The Saipan announcement comes as Chinese Defense Minister Chang Wan Quan visited Washington to talk with U.S. Defense Secretary. The specific topics of U.S. bases in the Pacific didn't come up during the joint press conference held by the two officials, but the Chinese defense minister said in response to questions about the U.S. military and increased focus on the Pacific that China is a peaceful, loving nation, and we hope that American strategy does not target a specific country in the region. So China knows that they're building these bases. They know that they're trying to surround him. That's the what they're doing is an old containment ideology. The old containment came, after World War II. They built all these bases around Russia. They thought that if they could show a strength of force, that they could contain that country for making moves to go outside. Okay, where were you? Okay. While the U.S. military insists that air-sea battle and the military entire pivot to Asia isn't about China. The other guy just said it was about China. These bases are indeed a check against any future Chinese expansion in the Pacific Ocean, according to the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a right-wing think tank. They got them, right-wing think tanks. China will be much more discreet throughout the entire region because U.S. power is already there. It's visible. You're not talking theory. You're already there in practice. This will also reassure American allies in the region that the U.S. commitment to the Pacific is legit. That's kind of, the U.S. pulled out of Vietnam, they pulled out of the Philippines, but I think they're trying to get back into the Philippines. Like they said, they have some bases there. But how can you trust America, Look what they did to Afghanistan, Okay. This will also reassure American allies in the region. As part of the rebalancing to the Pacific, you have to show people it's real at a time when so much of U.S. power is increasingly questioned by our budget debate. So now they're, you know, the military's asking. They get, you know, so much money anyway out of the American people, and they want more. You know, they want more. They don't want China to get any more anything as part of the rebalancing of the Pacific. Okay, we did that. General Herbert Hawk Carlisle, commander of all U.S. forces assets in the Pacific, said that the United States is planning on operating tankers, fighters, bombers out of the string of bases throughout the South Pacific and Southwest Asia, like the sites at Tinian and Saipan. Those facilities aren't slated for permanent occupation, but they are. Once the United States puts something in like that, they're going to keep it. Okay, or at least that's what America... Turning the page. Oh, boy. American commanders say... Instead, the sites will be a steady stream of U.S. and Northern Pacific-based units visiting on a regular basis. So, what they're doing is surrounding China. They don't want to, the U.S. doesn't want to lose any of its powers. They don't want China to get any natural resources from any of these countries around the world. The U.S. has got plans made up, and right, you know, just what these guys said. You know, that guy just said, you know, China's our problem, our number one problem. We can't, you know, we got to keep China in its place. You know, we can't let them out of their spot, out of their place. We just can't do it. We want to be number one, Ray. We got to be number one in the world. And, you know, this war on the people of Ukraine is really a horrible thing. It's just a horrible thing. And the people are really suffering a lot. And the U.S. is giving all this armament to them. They even have people on the ground in Ukraine that they, you know, but they're not in combat situations. That's what they said. They're not in combat situations. But we know how that went with advisors in Vietnam. That didn't last long, you know. But, I hear that the Russians are hitting all the infrastructure of these countries, their power systems, their water systems, their sewer systems, just everything, like, you know. But then I sit and think about what the U.S. did to Iraq. They bombed water systems. They bombed sewer systems. They bombed everything. And for the U.S. to be sitting back, saying, you know, what the Russians are doing in war crimes, what the U.S. have done in war crimes, you know, I keep going back to Vietnam because that's what I know most about. But the B-52s, they just pounded civilian areas. They bombed little cities, you know. Vietnam didn't have very many big cities. But the U.S. bombed a hospital in Hanoi. They bombed streets in Hanoi, the homes of people. They bombed little, like I was saying, they just... Where these B-52 bombs, you know, they don't stop in the middle of the air and take a right turn or a left turn. You know, they kill anything when that bomb drops. In Vietnam, the U.S. military used artillery. Artillery would hit villages with people in them. Napalm. They used napalm. They used these bombs that would send out flechettes and just destroy everything in front of it. The U.S. used those in Vietnam. And now they're saying that Russia's doing bad. What about the U.S.? They were doing bad doing that. Spraying Agent Orange all over Vietnam. I just got a poster. I bought a poster. And it says, it has this forest with these animals. It's just a beautiful poster. Just a beautiful poster. And it's on the, across the bottom, it says, we have to rehabilitate our forests. Because they bombed forests. They bombed, when they bombed, they just, I was talking to a friend of mine. He was an old Viet Cong soldier that was fighting the Americans and the South Vietnamese government. And after the war, he started a mill, a small mill. You know, he had to get permission from the government of where he could go in and cut these trees down. But he says, one of the problems, we had to be really, really careful because there was shrapnel in these trees. And so they'd be pushing these trees through and they'd hit that shrapnel and it would just destroy their blades. And hit that and the blade would just, you know, fly. And he said that people got hurt because of the shrapnel in the trees. And another guy, I didn't know him very well, but he started a business where he made spoons and forks and knives out of metal that the U.S. left behind, which is pretty cool doing that. But for the U.S. to call another country war criminals, you know, we also did war crimes. No matter, you know, no matter what these guys say. And thank you for listening to Veterans Voice Radio Show. Thanks, Ray, for doing the board. We'll be back on December 16th at 9 a.m. And there it is.
is KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope.
Hi there. Thanks for joining me.